UK Wine Show, show number 5. G'day, and welcome to the UK Wine Show. I'm your host, Chris Scott, and this show is brought to you by 3050, the UK Wine Tasting Company. 3050 are a leading wine tasting company for both private and corporate tastings. So if you're after a glass or two and having a bit of fun, give them a call at 3050.co.uk. That's thirtyfifty.co.uk. This week, we've got a pretty good show. We've got Lisa Grimley from the Wines of Germany. They're the UK PR arm for the German wine scene. They're responsible for promoting German wines here. She's going to be talking about the history of wines, maybe some of the cultural stereotypes that have evolved over time, and what's in store in the future as we finish up this World Cup season. But before we get to that, the news with Jane Scott.
Cheers, Chris. Well, first the good news with results from the English and Welsh Wine of the Year competition. Knightenborough has taken the top award for the fourth year running in the UK wine industry's national competition. The prestige Cuvée Blanc de Blanc 1998 took the Wine of the Year prize, and the company scooped the trophy for the best sparkling wine too. Chapel Down was also well rewarded, winning a total of 5 awards. Its Tenterden Estate Pinot Noir 2004 won the best red wine, while its English Rose 2005 won Best Rosé, and Owen Elias was awarded Winemaker of the Year for the second year in a row. Three Choirs also picked up another 2 trophies. Next up is bad news for growers in Portugal as heavy hailstorms hit port crops in the Douro. Initially it was thought that up to 80% of the crop in some areas had been decimated, but top port producers have said that losses are now less than predicted. More than 1,700 hectares of crop in 17 districts in northern Portugal have been destroyed, according to the Portuguese Agricultural Ministry. But Taylor's Port Managing Director Adrian Bridge believes the likely loss of production to the whole region will be between 10 and 20%, so not as bad as they first thought. Affected growers are calling for government help and compensation, though. And finally, the big night in is overtaking the big night out. More of us are opting to stay at home and enjoy a glass or two rather than go out to the pub, according to recent research. Weekly visits to the pub are falling as consumers are tempted by cut-price promotions in the supermarkets. Sales of wine to be drunk at home now account for 64% of the market, although the market is static overall. And what are we doing while we wine away our hours at home? Well, the research showed that nearly half of all these drinking occasions will be in front of the telly.
Thanks, Jane. That's great. I suppose they could always run a 3050 wine tasting. Next up, we've got Lisa Grimley from Wines of Germany. She's going to be talking a wee bit about German wines and how the British consumer relates to it, particularly given that the World Cup's on. Posh is reported to enjoy a glass of Liebe, and when Bex has finished his dry period associated with the World Cup, perhaps he'll be getting into it as well. But let's have a listen to what Lisa has to say about German wines and the UK wine scene. I'm here with Lisa Grimley from Wines of Germany. Wines of Germany are the UK PR agency?
Yep, we're the representative of the Deutsche Wein Institute here in the UK, looking after German wines on a generic basis, so representing everybody who's present in the market or looking to enter the UK market.
I suppose what I'd like to do is just start off with a wee bit of the history about German wines. The UK British consumers got a set of perceptions. I wouldn't mind seeing how that evolved over time.
So
when do you think the heyday was?
I'd probably say the heyday stems back to around the 1920s, where sort of German wine was up there along with the likes of Bordeaux and Burgundy, and it was very much a proud thing to have on your dinner table or to serve to your friends. It really was a sort of elite status wine.
I saw a wee while ago that there was comparing prices of Burgundy and Bordeaux and German Mosel, and they're all about the same price from the 1920s.
Absolutely, that's where sadly Germany hasn't managed to hold on to those prices, and I dearly wish it had, but in the 20s it really was up there price-wise, and as I say, you know, it was the chosen wine to be on everyone's table, and I think it had the benefit of being the white wine. Riesling was very much the white grape of the day.
So what do you think happened? Was it around the wartime, or?
I don't think the war had necessarily had such a sudden impact. I think obviously logistics and wine industry was probably damaged across the globe, well, across Europe and the old world. But I don't think necessarily the war was the thing. I think when Germany started to suffer was much, much later, because I think you need to remember in the 1970s and the 1980s, German wines were absolutely everywhere. And I think for many, certainly my parents' generation, the first introduction to wine and probably their first taste of wine was a German wine, and it was probably a brand such as Blue Nun or Black Tower, which are both still in existence now, and continued to grow throughout the 70s and 80s.
And in the 70s, 80s, huge increase in consumption.
Absolutely, yeah. Wine suddenly became no longer the domain of the elite and the domain of the rich. It was very much accessible to everybody. People could afford it. There was a little bit more wealth in the UK economy at the time. And I certainly remember seeing bottles of wine on the table on a more regular basis.
That was with your folks?
Indeed, yeah.
So there's nothing more naff than your parents' drink, isn't there?
Indeed, so... You know, and people are obviously going to rebel against that. And suddenly, you know, at the end of the 80s, early 90s, we see an increase in volume exports from Australia in particular. Mm. And I think that was a real turning point for German wine. And we didn't sort of fall off the shelf overnight, but sales have gradually declined. And I think, you know, whilst wine consumption up until 2005 in the UK continued to grow, it is actually levelling off at the moment. So that there will come a point where we can't continue to consume as much as we continue to export.
The Aussie wines, what do you think it was? Was it the varietal labelling, or maybe the fact that they weren't as sweet as the mm-hmm. German styles?
I think it was a combination of both of those things, Chris. I think varietal labelling made life very easy for people, because there is this interest in wine, but actually people don't have time to sit and read a textbook and don't want to necessarily do a course. But for them to grasp that if they see Chardonnay on a label, it means it's a white wine, it means it's a grape variety, and they're probably going to like it. Life was made very easy. And I think, you know, where certain brands benefited is they probably had a Chardonnay, but they probably equally had a Shiraz Cabernet or something along those lines. So it was easy for people to move and try different wines.
So you're saying that the decline of German's been a gradual thing?
Yeah.
Probably similar along with France.
Yeah, a lot of the old world countries have suffered in a similar vein. Germany perhaps more dramatic, but I think later on we'll have a look at a few stats to explain where that decline is taking place. But really the growth areas have been the USA, Australia.
I noticed earlier that Spain doesn't really suffer as much. Do you think that's possibly because people go on holiday to Spain a lot, so
they see
it a lot more, so they're not so... So they, when they bring them back, they go, oh, I know about Spanish wines, I'll drink Spanish wines. Do you think the fact that there's a load of football fans in Germany at the moment will help a lot?
I certainly think it will help with Germany's perception. I mean, I've seen a lot more positive press coverage about Germany as a whole, not necessarily the wines. And what has been positive, if people have commented that their perception of Germany prior to visiting has perhaps changed. A lot of the journalists that have gone over and said, you know, we associate them with being this super organised, efficient, trains running on time. And you know what? The occasional train is late and they're humans just like the rest of us. And I think it's a positive time for Germany. I think there's a lot of fun to be had around the World Cup, and Germany are doing well to stay in the competition. So
Wimbledon just started recently. I'm sure the Germans consider that England's a land of reigning 24/7.
Well, they wouldn't be far wrong this week, but yeah, you know, I think we all have stereotypes that we live with, but I think things like the World Cup and Germany being host can only be an opportunity to lessen this.
Talking of stereotypes, who do you think's the classic German consumer? Is it the football wife?
I think there's a combination of classic consumers. I think some of the better value German wines probably do appeal to the ex-alcopop drinker. They've perhaps got a bit more residual sugar than other wines, and they're obviously great value for money. So I think that's a natural extension. And I know from sort of blind tastings we've done in the past, people will actually say they like one thing, but when you pour something else, you know, it's fashionable to say I like a dry wine, but actually quite a lot of people prefer that slight sweetness.
Yeah, no. And it goes well with food as well.
Indeed, yeah. German, I mean, particularly with the rise of Asian cuisine and international cuisine, in London particular, German wines are on every top restaurant wine list. We have a great reputation and a great relationship with lots of the sommeliers, and every year we do food and wine matching tastings with them.
Lisa, what do you think the UK perception is of German wines? I'm a Kiwi, so I'm not really allowed to have an opinion.
Okay, that's good. I think generally the perception is that they're cheaper than the average other wine country, that they would also be sweeter. And I think to a certain extent both of those preconceptions are true, but I think the consumer also needs to be aware that Germany has more to offer than just cheap sweet wines. There are some amazing wines going right through to high value Spätburgunders at sort of £20-30 a bottle, and I think that's one area nobody really associates with Germany is red wines.
I know in the US Robert Parker rated some of the German wines really highly, and German wines have been flying off the shelves in the US.
Absolutely, yeah. The US is sort of my dream market, and I dearly hope that the UK will mirror that. But there really is a true Riesling renaissance. Riesling is very much asked for by the glass in bars and restaurants, and prices driven high. As you say, it's all very much the top-end estate wines that are selling there by the caseload.
In the UK, if I was after a bottle of German wine rather than maybe the Blue Nuns or the Black Towers, where would you recommend, or what sort of wines do you think you'd recommend for me to have a try?
Yeah, I mean, Odbins stock an interesting range of wines from a guy called Rainer Lingenfelder, and they're all, the names in the consumer's mind, they're all named after animals. So there's bird label, bee label, owl label, and there are a range of different grape varieties from different regions within Germany, around £6 to £7 a bottle, and they're really interesting wines. The bird label Riesling is a slightly dry Riesling, but he's also got a Mosel Riesling in there called Fish Label, which provide two quite contrasting styles of Riesling from one producer, and just shows you the diversity of the grape in the regions. Some other good producers out there, Dr. L, a wine by Ernie Lawson, which is a fantastic wine, a classic sort of Mosel style with that, to me, which I appreciate as lovely sweetness, which I agree is not to everybody's taste, but I think there's nothing nicer on a summer's day, especially if you're going to be out for a picnic and you're drinking for a few hours at one time. It makes sense to drink something at 7 or 8% alcohol, so you can still be slightly withered towards the end of the day. And there's some other wines, Kendermann's Dry Riesling or Kendermann's Pinot Grigio. Kendermann's is a great sort of dynamic producer in Germany, coming up with lots of new wines and really fitting the consumer demand, really meeting that. And also Devil's Rock is another. People, on hearing the name, may assume it's actually a New World brand.
But sounds
it is
like an Australian brand.
But it is actually a German brand, and that's a direct translation of from where the winery is based under the Devil's Rock. So,
do you think, Riesling is German's king of grapes, and a lot of the wine press think Riesling is a fantastic grape variety, but in the UK, the general consumer may not be enthusiastic about Riesling, but they're getting a lot more exposure from New Zealand and Australian Rieslings coming through. Do you think that's helping you guys at all?
Absolutely, and we sort of welcome that with open arms. Whenever we're doing trade events, we quite often put German Rieslings up against competitors from New Zealand and Australia, because for us, if people are introduced to German Riesling via Australia, that's absolutely fine. To me, it's getting them introduced to Riesling, which is a great variety that, you know, is not up there with the popularity stakes as Chardonnay.
You know, you think of German wines, you think it's cool climate, so the grapes aren't going to ripen as much, and they're going to have lots and lots of acidity, but they tend to be quite sweet. You'd think that without so much ripeness, you'd be lacking the sweetness. What drives that style?
Yeah, I mean, the residual sugar that you find in a lot of the wilds is a deliberate attempt by the winemaker really to counteract some of that sharp acidity that you would otherwise have, and particularly in Riesling. Riesling is actually quite a sweet grape, and it has got these luscious, rich flavours. So you, despite the fact that logically your mind would tell you there'll be dry wines, actually from the Mosel and the sort of northern German regions, they can tend to be sweeter with that lower alcohol as well.
What do you think the future is of the German wines? You talked about the sweetness balancing out some of the acidity, but I've been talking to English grape growers who are now growing all sorts of weird, wonderful grapes, banking on global warming. Do you think that'll have an influence? And what other influences are really driving the future of German wines?
Absolutely. I mean, global warming is something I think we're all, everybody's watching, you know, be you in the south of Spain turning into a desert right through to the northern slopes of Germany. But I think there is still a place in the market, and despite a few degrees more warmth, we will still be able to make these fine, lower alcohol, nicely acidic wines in Germany. What we will see is probably a difference in the wines coming from the southern regions, the sort of Baden and Württemberg. We are seeing an increasing tendency for red grape varieties being planted in those regions. So I think the industry will gradually change, but it won't be an overnight, suddenly we're making Chardonnays.
Yeah.
You know, Riesling is Germany's grape, and we plan to hold on to it.
You mentioned earlier about some stats. You're talking about the change in sales. What's really happening in the UK with regards to the way the wine sales are going in from Germany?
Yeah, I mean, in terms of sort of where Germany is in the market, just to put it in context, Germany is currently in eighth position and has about 6% of the volume share of the UK market. Germany is in decline, but what's really interesting is if you look at the price categories, you'll see that all of the decline is in the under £3 category. So that's the very sort of cheap, sweet end of the market. What's positive for us and where we feel we're going along the right lines is that there's much more growth in the above £3 categories, particularly in the above £6, which is very positive news for us. They're coming from a small base, but these are the wines that really will be the success of Germany, yeah, will determine the success in the UK.
Just before we finish up, Lisa, what sort of wine tip do you have for us?
I quite often get people sort of a little bit confused about German wine labels and terminology. And I think the biggest tip I can give someone if they want to try German wine is if you want to look for something with that residual sugar and the sweetness, look for a lower alcohol. Alcohol percentage has to be on the bottle by law. So look for something at a 7 to 9%. If, on the other hand, you prefer a drier style wine, look for an alcohol volume of 11 to 12%, and you'll find that much more in keeping with the style of wine that you're looking for.
So. Excellent. What about the labelling? There's Trocken, Hab Trockens.
I mean, you'll quite often see these terms pop up, and not everybody's that familiar with them. But if you ever see Trocken on a label, Trocken literally means dry, and Halb Trocken is half dry, so it's off dry. Cabernet is an off-dry term that's slightly sweeter than a Halb Trocken, but you're still in the drier zones. When you start to see things like Spätlese and Auslese, you're getting much more into the richness and sweetness of a German wine that are more, in most people's palates, towards the dessert wine level.
Okay. Thanks very much, Lisa.
You're welcome.
Cheers.
That was Lisa from Wines Germany. Next week, we're going to be talking to Martin Turner from Riedel. What we're going to do is taste a few wines and see how the glass changes the taste of the wine. Then, on the podcast, we're going to actually look at the different glass shapes and how that will change the taste in your mouth. It's quite interesting, and it certainly does affect the way the wine tastes. Until then, good drinking and cheers.